John Gregg makes changes where his new TV ads were produced. Will outside money lead to a spending record in the Senate race? The Indiana House Republican agenda, moving surplus money into state pensions, and Ben Bernanke in town. That, plus Andy Horning hates politics and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 5,
2012. Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. The path to a successful business has unexpected twists and turns. The legal professionals at Ice Miller are dedicated to guiding businesses along the journey. Experience takes businesses to the top. Ice Miller can help them stay there. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.
This week, John Gregg, the Democratic candidate for governor, changed his TV ads. They will no longer be shot in his hometown. Neither John Gregg nor his campaign will reveal details of the advertising that will result from this recording session on the third floor of the State House. Gregg insists that he's sticking with an established campaign plan.
We're shooting more ads, not new ads, more ads. We ran out of ads and we're shooting more ads.
But the first thing to notice, aside from the State House setting, is the dark suit worn by Gregg.
I'm John Gregg. The guy with two first names running for governor.
Gone is the casual dress and hometown setting in his first five ads, all shot in the southern Indiana community of Sanborn, an approach that, according to a recent poll, appeared to be ineffective. This is what Ball State professor Ray Sheely said on News 8 Monday.
He's going to have to start talking some real issues and where he plans to take Indiana. And thus far, that hasn't happened in his television.
You know, there's what we call the chattering class, and I don't listen to the chattering class.
While Gregg brushed off the criticism and a crew member brushed on some makeup, the Democrat did say that he will be saying more about his plans in coming ads. Will a change in strategy help John Gregg? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney. Republican Eric Holcomb. John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Eric Holcomb, is it too late for John Gregg to change his theme?
Well, you can never say it's too late, but this, as I've said before on this show, it's been one kind of head scratcher after another with each commercial. I keep waiting for the third name to emerge. You know, he's got a middle name, and maybe that'll get some traction for him.
You don't think his ads have been effective?
Not to date.
Okay. I've been hearing from Democrats who thought something needed to be done.
Well, I think his strategy from the beginning was to introduce himself, and those earlier ads are who John Gregg is. He's not misleading you. He's not wrapping himself in the sheep's clothing like Mike Pence has done for the last 6 months.
But he spent five ads doing that.
I understand. And this one, though, has real substance and the differences. His experience is what we need as governor of Indiana. He's balanced the budget. He's cut taxes. He's run a university. He's worked in the private sector. He's done the kinds of things that need to be done by a governor, as opposed to Mike Pence, who's come to us, back to us from Washington, where all the problems have originated. So,
the ad that we showed in production there has been completed, and that's the message in the ad.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Will this make a difference, John?
I think the same analysis that we offered earlier, I've been saying for a few weeks now, and he needs more money. And unless he can buy the points to drive this point home, then it won't matter. It's a chicken and an egg situation, of course. But you know, I happen to think that those first five ads contained, you know, a lot of John Gregg, including the little sucker punches that he was making against Mike Pence. So they weren't all totally innocuous. I thought he was, you know, driving home his points at the time. Now he's gone with the serious ads, the issue ads, and he just doesn't have the money necessary at this point to really make the difference. No matter what the ads are, he's really going to have to turn the race somehow, and this hasn't been it.
Do you think that he made this change out of necessity, or was this the plan all along?
Well, I know he indicated to you in the interview that you did there at the State House during the taping of this most recent, shall we say, serious
commercial that it was part of an ongoing plan that he had. What did he say? It's new ads.
He wrote a book that was titled "From Sanborn to the State House," and he said this has been the plan all along.
Part of the continuum. And I guess we'll take him at his word. I will say that the earlier spots, I think they were refreshing in a way. They were clever, and they did get for somebody who is somewhat cash strapped. As John suggests, you have to have more than just a great ad. You got to have an ad that's going to be air repeatedly in markets across the state. But to the extent he was able to get some free media with these rather clever ads, and they were that, I think, early on. But then people were starting to say, okay, where's the rest of it? And also, what sells in, say, Sanborn or other parts of maybe rural Indiana might not sell as well up in Democratic strongholds of Northwest Indiana, where they're saying, that's not the Indiana I know. And I think this is a recognition of that, and maybe an attempt to broaden the message or the appeal.
So he's getting to the point here where he's talking about what he's going to do and what he's done. And it's 4 days before early voting begins.
Right. And if he spent four or five ads trying to introduce himself, a key to a good ad is what's remembered about it. And folks will remember his mother wasn't listening to him, his sons were pouring water on him, and his pastor was in a video. That's what people will remember. So probably falling a little short this late in the game.
I think what they'll remember is that he's a real person, and that he hasn't tried to change his image the way Mike Pence has. Mike Pence has been a Tea Party member before there was even a Tea Party, and he has been to the right on every single issue. He's opposed to minimum wage, he's opposed to health care, he's opposed to any abortion should be outlawed, on and on and on and on. And since then, he's tried to remake himself in the same kind of etch-a-sketch way that Mitt Romney has, and he has a lot of money behind that. But with John Gregg, what you see is what you get. And I think people, Hoosiers, particularly Hoosiers with common sense, recognize that.
You know, that's my point exactly, though, Ann. If you can't see it, you can't get it. Well, and that's been his biggest problem to this point.
To the Senate race, $12 million. That's how much outside money is going toward TV ads in the Indiana race for U.S. Senate. This week, three Democratic groups, including the super PAC called Center Forward, announced plans to spend $1 million on this ad attacking Richard Murdoch. Hours later, the conservative PAC, known as Club for Growth Action, revealed a $500,000 buy for this ad attacking Joe Donnelly. The spending is outside the control of the candidates.
Both the Democrats and the Republicans recognize the road to the majority in the 2013 Congress will run through Indiana. If the Democrats hope to have a majority, they know they have to win this seat. If the Republicans want to gain the majority, we know we have to keep this seat.
You know, my focus has always been on Hamilton County and Bedford and Fort Wayne, and it seems that this is all national people trying to focus on Indiana. I'm just keeping my focus on here at home.
So the most expensive statewide race in Indiana history was the 2004 race for governor, $33 million. This race is now beyond $20 million, and we're seeing a couple of million spent a week with 4 weeks to go. Will this be a record?
I think it very well could be. I mean, thanks to Citizens United and that ridiculous Supreme Court decision. But what they're going to need to spend that much money, because you're not going to make a silk purse out of Richard Murdoch. I mean, he is what he is, and people already know him, and they don't like what he did to Richard Lugar, and they know he was dissed by his own presidential candidate in the debate, who said, I don't think my way or the highway is the way to go, which is what Richard
Murdoch...
And you think
Romney was thinking of Richard Murdoch
when he
said that?
Well, we know Paul Ryan was when he gave that interview on a national TV show.
The interview that was excerpted from Paul Ryan was actually conducted in May, before he was even on the ticket.
I don't care when it was conducted. The fact of the matter is that Richard Murdoch's approach to politics has been repudiated by his presidential and his vice presidential candidates.
Okay.
He wasn't repudiated. He stood on stage down in Evansville with him at a joint event the last time that Mitt Romney was in Indiana. And I'm not surprised. I agree with Ann that so much money and attention is coming to Hoosier soil for this race. After all, we haven't seen a budget come out of the United States Senate in over 3 years under Harry Reid's control. And people are expecting to get this country back on track. And we're going to have to make a change. And it's not just one seat in the Senate. One of 100.
It's whether or not the Tea Party controls both the Senate and the House. That's what's at stake here. And Hoosiers know that, and they don't want it.
Is that Harry Reid's problem?
No.
He has
a majority. Murdoch's problem.
Well, John Schwanis, the Republicans are trying to make this about Harry Reid. Joe Donnelly, as you heard, wants this to be about Indiana issues. Can either one of them be successful in that?
Well, I mean, it's a time-honored tradition. Sometimes pays dividends, sometimes doesn't, of forgetting about your opponent and bringing, let's say, Nancy Pelosi. How many times have we, you know, in the last cycle, a lot of Republicans were running against Nancy Pelosi. It didn't matter who was opposite them on the ballot. And we're seeing that again now with Harry Reid as the bogeyman that, this time. I don't know if it works or not. Certainly, because of the stakes are so high with the fight for control of the Senate and the changed landscape in terms of regulation, I think those who suggested this will be a record-setting year are right, although when it goes into the record books, it probably is sort of...
Should have an asterisk.
Well, how you do it, like with baseball. This is the steroid era of...
Because it wasn't candidate spending, it was outside.
It's financial, I mean, and it is sort of the political funding equivalent of steroids, and I don't know if it'll last. This is the new law of the land. I suppose it is, but it's a different landscape with different rules.
I think you're right. There's a real auto theme in the ads here at the moment from the candidates. You got Murdoch with an ad with a car going the wrong direction, and then you've got suddenly now a Mercedes showing up in the Donnelly ad saying it's my way or the highway.
Well, we are the crossroads of America, Jim, and it's a heavy auto industry state, so why would you expect anything else? I mean, metaphor is a metaphor. But I do think that Donnelly has a message that has the better chance to resonate with people who may be on the fence about this race. John talked about the boogeyman argument against the leadership in either the House or the Senate, and I think that the Jobs case it has a better chance to resonate in Indiana. Does that mean he'll win? I don't have any idea, but I think his argument is probably one that has a better chance of moving people.
And I think particularly in Indiana, because if Murdoch's stand against the loans to the auto industry, which would have cost 150,000 Hoosier jobs, I think it's very hard for him to sell that to the average voter in Indiana.
If Joe Donnelly wanted this to be about Indiana, he should have voted against the medical device tax in Obamacare. He said he was against it. He voted for it. It cost jobs.
Moving on, Indiana House Speaker Brian Bosma spelled out his priorities for the 2013 General Assembly this week, and it's a short list. Surrounded by his leadership team, Speaker Bosma called for a balanced budget and then improvement in two very broad areas, jobs and education. That's the entire list. Yet the potential exists for lots of activity in the Indiana House on divisive social issues that include a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage and new attempts to restrict abortion. Bosma won't rule that out.
Issues, all kinds of issues are important to all kinds of different people. And when you have an elected body that accurately represents Hoosiers, which is precisely what the General Assembly does, some of the issues that are no doubt on your mind in this regard are important to Hoosiers as well. So we'll treat them just as we do any other issue, fair and open hearings.
And Democrat Scott Pelath tweeted that what Bosma is saying is that he won't kill any bills that a committee chairman won't kill. John Ketzenberger, did Bosma unveil the real list?
Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. But clearly, social issues will be a big part of the legislative process this year. Whether they move will be up to the process itself. But I think the speaker clearly indicated that he's not going to try to tamp things down from above. He's going to let things happen. And he's got a clear focus. I think, you know, he talked about the gubernatorial campaign's efforts to cut taxes and said, look, we probably ought to look at other things in the budget first. And he mentioned restoring some cuts to education, things like that. So I think he's got a pretty clear idea of what he wants to do, but I also don't think he's going to shut anybody down.
Yeah, he suggested there might be more spending. I mean, we're looking at a circumstance now. The governor says we might have a $2 billion surplus again. Does it make sense to be saving all that money?
We've seen before, Jim, when the state has had surpluses, and it does happen from time to time, there has been a rush by members of both parties to figure out ways to, in many cases, to give it back. But, you know, all of those surplus heydays have been followed inevitably by downturns. And I think this is one of those questions, is history going to be the guide or political expediency? They're the same competing forces that we see every budget year.
We're going to get to that a little more in a second, but, you know, We saw the House Republican caucus get somewhat out of control last year with attacks on the Girl Scouts and other things. Can that be prevented?
It wasn't the caucus.
It was a member of the caucus. It was a member of the caucus.
It wasn't the caucus. The Speaker of the House is right to keep the main thing the main thing. Most Hoosiers are talking about jobs and the economy and education, and that's exactly what the Speaker said is going to drive the next session in the General Assembly. What you didn't hear, what you haven't heard, is Representative Pilaf or Representative Lawson or Representative Bauer tell us what they're running for or on. Silence.
Well, you know, the irony of this is it's the same bait and switch they did in 2010. They came out with a program in 2010 and threw it out. And they went after right to work. They went after immigrants. They went after gays. They went after women. They, you know, that's what they're going to do again when they're in control. Fool me once, shame on me or you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And that's exactly what's happening.
But can you imagine if he stood up there and they unveiled the easel or the board with the goals and it said, further clamp down on illegals, you know,
well,
ban.
Don't have a press conference. Don't go out there and mislead people and tell them that's really your agenda when it isn't.
Well, these are priorities. These are legitimate priorities, right?
Sure, there would be legitimate priorities, but they're not going to be the priorities of his caucus.
They're going to be the priorities that keep the state moving forward.
Well, they're
time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific poll question in connection with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, should state lawmakers avoid social issues? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question was, should the lottery be privatized? 19% said yes, 64% said no, 17% said it's a question for the next administration. To take part in the poll, just go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. A $2 billion state budget surplus means money back for you and more money in state pension funds. $360 million will go to taxpayers in the form of a refund on your 2013 tax form. While the state isn't saying how much everyone will get just yet, it will likely be more than $100. Now, another $360 million will go into the state's five pension funds. Governor Daniels says this comes at a time when many states can't honor pension commitments.
That'll never be the case in Indiana, we're taking further steps today to secure what are already, by every measure, the most secure set of pension funds in the country.
Oh, this is kind of a remarkable occurrence that we're able to do this at this particular point in time in our history.
State Senator Luke Kenley there, John Schwantes, are those overstatements?
Let's just put it this
way. Yes!
They're bold statements, yeah. But this is a rarity. I mean, to in this climate, and with the news, the headlines you see from one coast to the other with states that are continuing to bleed red ink and are suffering mightily, we can certainly, and people do, debate how the state mm-hmm. got where it is, and was it inappropriate cuts to
education,
very, very laudable causes, right? And did it usurp the role of the legislature because the governor and the administration ultimately withheld funds that had been designated by the General Assembly. So, that argument aside, when all is said and done, and the biography is written, and you can say, well, this was a governor who, at the end of his second term, was able to deliver funds for these, to shore up these right. pension funds, and, better yet, give everybody a little extra something in there.
Well, it's going to be a big part of his legacy.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this week's events is that Senator Kenley's and others insisted that some of this money be used for a good cause other than taxpayer refunds, and they demanded these investments in pension funds.
Well, the difference is whether you get an immediate benefit or you get a benefit down the road. And any dollar you put into the pension funds now is a lot of dollars you don't have to spend later. And I will agree with the governor in the sense that, and Senator Kenley, because he really pushed for this, that is the thing you have to do. Indiana's pension obligations, four of the five are in very good shape. The teacher's retirement fund still has a large unfunded liability, and the legislature needs to continue to address that. What they did here was the right thing.
It would have made more sense to put it all into the retirement fund to save money down the road, because the $100 thing is a gimmick. It's a gimmick. And is it politically a good gimmick? Sure it is. Is it good public policy? No, it's not. Because we cut that amount of money out of education funding for K-12 and out of higher education funding. And when you talk about long-term investments, that's where the money pays off there and in the teacher pension funds, not in the $100 that you get back on your as a tax credit next year, presumably.
How big a part of the governor's legacy is this?
Well, it'll be remembered. It'll be remembered that the state is in great fiscal, has a great fiscal position, occupies one, and that we're paying down our debt at the very time that many states are racking it up. And the governor and other Republican leaders believe that at some point the money's the people's, not just the government, that the money just thrown at different programs doesn't equate to better performance. We're improving on all these areas. It doesn't mean we need to hoard all the money.
And you should ask yourself if this is going to be part of the legacy, because as I recall, Jim, you were the biographer in the official history of Indiana governors who wrote the chapter on Mitch Daniels. So you can tell us if it's going to be part of the legacy or not.
Well, I don't know that I'm going to get that assignment again.
I'm lobbying for you.
I already wrote the version that was published 6 years ago. The chairman of the Federal Reserve used a visit to Indianapolis to send two messages this week. First, Ben Bernanke explained the policies the Fed enacted to stimulate the economy. He also encouraged Congress to respect the privacy of the Fed's discussions so political disputes don't influence decisions made by the agency. And Bernanke said the evidence suggests the economy is not in recession.
So we expect the economy to continue to grow. That's our best forecast as of now. So we are not expecting a recession. That being said, with an economy which is growing only sort of 1.5 to 2%, that is not fast enough to lower the unemployment rate.
And Eleni, that was a big visit for the Economic Club of Indiana.
No question about it.
How about for the rest of us?
Well, I think that, you know, it's great that we had him here, and he had good news. Obviously, we had good news this week. The unemployment rate is below 8% for the first time since the second year or the second wing of the
Bush administration. Since 2009.
Well, actually, even earlier than that, I think. So it's
first
really
time,
good
first
news.
First time it's below 8 in 44 months.
Okay.
Which is nearly 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, it's good news.
Yeah. How much of a political problem is that for the Republicans? That's been Mitt Romney's favorite line on the stump, is that we've had 8% unemployment for 43 straight months.
Well, if the labor force was the same as when Barack Obama came into office, the unemployment rate would be about 10%.
Actually, there
people
were more
quitting
people
looking for work.
No, that's not the case. There were more people looking this time. So it wasn't that factor.
What the chairman was saying is, what I read, I was fortunate to be among a couple thousand people that day. He was saying that we're in a recovery, that's what he said, but it's a very slow one, right, and anemic, and don't blame me, there are a lot of other political reasons why. And he was projecting that blame towards Washington, D.C. So
and
we got a
George
long...
Bush with 750,000
Barack Obama said we'd be at 5% right now.
750,000 jobs a month, two wars, an unfunded prescription drug benefit and tax
remember
cuts.
When we passed
George
the,
Bush.
Remember when we passed the stimulus and Barack Obama said we'd be at 5%?
Well, yeah,
right
didn't
now.
Know how
Ben Bernanke
bad
was.
You had left
oh, he
it.
Didn't know.
Judge if Ben Bernanke was pointing a finger at the Obama White House, he better back off a little bit, because I think Mitt Romney's already said he would. He's out. He would be not appointed to a third term.
He was
he was just recently appointed to a term, so he's still.
I mean, he would have.
Go,
yeah, but, he would have.
You know, I think it's interesting these job numbers. Jack Welch, a former head of GE, today when those job numbers came out, threw a lot of junk at this, questioning whether or not they'd been manipulated. And I think we really need to be careful when we have that kind of hanky-panky or those kind of suggestions being made, because these numbers are vetted very carefully by people who do some deep math. They are not manipulated by anybody, and I think that we need to keep that in mind as we go forward in the spin zone.
Finally, the latest installment of Candidate in the Kitchen. Andy Horning, the Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate, and his wife Wendell were on the Wish TV indie-style set this week making potato soup. They used ingredients from their own farm. And Horning talked about why he got into politics.
I hate politics. And it's one of those, if you hate it, like, you know, you hate snakes, so you want to find out where they live and beat them, you know, with a stick, you know, that kind of thing. That's pretty much, you know, there are a lot of people who are really just sort of, you know, go-getter, and I think I could do a great job in politics. It's really more, I want to put a leash on that bad boy.
Eric Holcomb, is that a recipe for success?
I didn't understand a word he said.
he started out by saying he hates politics, and I think what he was saying was he'd like to get on the inside so he could change it from the inside.
I think he loves doing what he hates. And he'll be, I'll bet everyone here a cheeseburger, he'll be running for office next year, even though there are no offices up next year.
And how many times would that make? Six, seven, something like that?
I asked him about being a frequent candidate, and he said Richard Lugar is a frequent candidate. He's a loser, is what he said. That's where it comes up.
Okay. There you have it.
Back to the potato soup.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Eric Holcomb, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Ice Miller, proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Things can go wrong in a thousand different ways. Businesses need a law firm that knows the thousand and first. The team of legal professionals at Ice Miller is committed to helping put the pieces back together. Ice Miller, it's a complex world. Be advised.